This is Carolyn Cromings, and welcome to the Quit Getting Screwed podcast, where we talk about everything related to contractors, construction, and information to help you run better businesses. Hey, good morning, guys, and welcome back to the Quit Getting Screwed podcast, where we talk about all the ways not to get screwed in the construction industry, because there are a lot of them. And today is a solo episode where I dive into what I like to call legal landmines. What are legal landmines? Okay, these are the things that you don't even know that are out there, but if you don't prepare for them, they could do serious damage or take you out completely. So I've kind of made a checklist that I go through with my, you know, my clients or any potential clients to go through and make sure that we're in line in all these areas and that they don't get taken out by one of these missteps that I've seen happen in the past. And so the first thing that if you're in the construction industry and you're a business is that you absolutely must be incorporated. And so what does that mean? It means whatever state that you are working in or states that in most states it's called the Secretary of State. In some states it's called something different, but it's where they register businesses. And so you register with the state, you file your paperwork, you say, hey, I'm going to be a business. There's a filing fee and they put you on file. And usually there's some kind of annual reporting fee, reporting requirement that you keep up with and keep in good standing. And so that's a yearly or more obligation that you keep up with whatever your state requires to be incorporated. And so why is this so important? Okay, being incorporated protects you individually and your individual assets from liability of your company. Whether that's liability for debts, you know, loans, you know, materials, whatever you've signed for on behalf of your company that your company owes money for or could get in trouble for doesn't necessarily mean that your personal assets are up for grabs. And they aren't if you are incorporated and run your company like its own entity, like it should be. So first thing, be incorporated. As a side note with that, whenever you sign a personal guarantee, which sometimes you're required to do, you know, to get a loan from a bank or some material suppliers require a personal guarantee, realize that in that situation, you are intentionally waiving your corporate protection. Meaning you're saying, yes, I agree that my personal assets can be up for grabs if the company cannot pay. And that's what a personal guarantee does. And it actually steps around the corporate protections. So the first thing is make sure you're incorporated. Make sure that you do whatever paperwork is required, normally on a yearly basis, to keep your corporation in good standing. Because if you don't, you'll forfeit it. And then those protections don't apply anyway. So it's not just a one-time thing. It's usually yearly or more often that you have to file updated paperwork or pay taxes, depending on whatever your state requires. And the other thing is, if you're working in more than one state, you can register your entity, whatever state it's originally formed in that state where you're working, which it should be required. So if I have a Delaware business and I'm doing business in Texas, I need to register or let the Secretary of State know that I'm a foreign business doing business in Texas, because you don't get the, you know, the protections or the certain rights if you're not incorporated in that state. So another thing to look out for. Another big landmine that happens a lot is when we deal with employees or subcontractors. First, you know, what is the difference between an employee and subcontractor? I know I've had episodes on this before. Basically, the more control you have over someone, the more likely they are an employee. And if someone has their own business and does their own thing and only works for you occasionally, the more likely they are a subcontractor. So, call us, call an attorney, have a discussion about what do you actually have? Do you actually have employees or do you have subcontractors? Okay, and so then once you know what you have, are we paying them properly? Because if you have employees, you got to pay them the right way, pay them overtime, potentially take out withholdings, all of the things. And, you know, if you have a subcontractor, then you need to have a written subcontract. And that spells out the terms of the agreement between you and the subcontractor. Don't just hire somebody and call them a sub. Don't just give them a PO. My firm offers a subcontract agreement for a flat fee of $2,500. I don't have any ads on my show, but I can promote myself. So that is one thing that we do in all 50 states, and particularly for your business. And actually, what I recommend if you're using the same subs over and over again, we use what's called a master subcontract agreement. And so what that means is the subcontractor signs your main terms and conditions, the 7 or 8, you know, up to 10 page document that is insurance, you know, all the risk involved. They sign that document one time. And then for each project, you issue a work order. And that main document follows them with every job. So they don't have to sign the same document over and over again. And like I said, we do it for a flat fee of $2,500. It's particularly for you. It's done in less than a week. That way your subs know exactly what to expect. It's in plain English. And then again, it really helps prove that subcontractor relationship as opposed to an employee. So if you have a subcontractor, you need a subcontract agreement. If you have employees, you absolutely need a consistent intake process and an employee handbook. That's also something we do at the firm for a flat fee, specifically for your business in the construction industry, because we have to have OSHA and all of the, you know, updated new mandates that OSHA may or may not be enforcing, but we'll find out on that. But, you know, just having, here's our application process, here's the kind of research we put into candidates, here's our interview process, just having that all, so that way you make sure it's not missed and you don't accidentally hire somebody that doesn't have a license or that is not qualified, you know, says they have something, but they don't, you know, don't have the qualification. So having that intake process is huge. And then an employee handbook. If there's ever an incident, if there's ever an accident, if there's any, one of the first things, what happens when you get sued, is they're going to ask for your employee handbook. What are your rules and regulations for your employees? If you don't have one, they can pretty much assume that you don't care about rules and regulations and you don't have any. And so it looks bad from a liability standpoint. So if we don't have a set of rules that everybody knows how to play by with the company, like safety rules or what's required when we drive a company truck, you know, what's required when we're dealing with company property, all of those things should be spelled out for a good process, but also from a liability standpoint, you look like a responsible business owner if you have this in place. And then when something happens, you're like, oh yeah, here's what they were supposed to be doing. They weren't supposed to be, you know, driving after hours, or they weren't supposed to be doing this or that. And so it was, you know, it's not my fault. I had the set of rules in place. They didn't follow them. You know, I will take care of it internally, but the liability is somewhat stopped because you can say, hey, yes, I'm a responsible business owner. I can protect the public, you know, by managing my employees through an employee handbook. So hugely important. And usually what happens, you have the onboarding process, you decide to hire somebody, you have the terms and conditions of employment, and then you have the employee handbook, which you give them all, which they sign off on before they actually start working. So, you know, something else, we can walk you through the entire process. All right, we've been through over subcontracts, insurance. The other thing is that being in business in general is a risky proposition, specifically in the construction industry. So there are companies out there that do write policies specifically for people in the construction industry. All right, the same guy you got your car insurance from is not who you want to get your business general liability insurance from, because you can have insurance all day long, but there's a whole bunch of exceptions that may or may not be covered depending on your scope of work, especially if you're in construction and you hire subcontractors. Your general policy is not going to cover any damages or incidents caused by the subcontractor. So find a good company that write policies specifically for construction companies, and you can find one that does, you know, specifically for your scope of work. Like if you're a painter, you know, will it cover overspray? You know, you want to ask all these questions where you want to know in advance, here are the potential ways that I could get in trouble. Does my insurance cover that? Or can I find insurance that would cover that? You know, workman's comp is another huge thing that will limit your liability down the road. I know, especially if you're in the construction industry, it's expensive up front, but it could be a lot more expensive if you don't have it. So find an insurance agent that's specifically for construction. Sit down, ask them the questions, tell them what your business does. Find out if that is something that you can have covered. If not, so you know what risk you're out there taking. Don't just assume a GL is going to cover it in a general liability policy, because there's lots of things that GLs don't cover. So know that. Okay, so then we get into the actual performing of the work. All right. So there's contracts involved. Now, either your customer is signing your contract or you are signing someone else's contract. So let's take those one at a time. If your customer is signing your contract, let's say, in most situations, this is a residential project, and I can say that I deal with pissed off homeowners a lot of the times. I get calls from pissed off homeowners all the time about bad work from contractors, or mostly that the expectations a homeowner had about how the project was supposed to happen and what could be expected weren't properly managed, and so now they're pissed off. And so what does that mean? That means that your customer has an idea of how this project is supposed to go. And I promise you, it's not based on anything in the construction or in reality of how it's actually going to go. So you have a picture too in your head of how the project is going to go. And what we need to do is get those pictures to match. You know, you want the owner to have in their head the same picture that you have, so that there's no surprises or unexpected things, or if there is, we take care of those in advance. And so a well-written contract should handle all those things. What does the schedule look like? What is the actual scope of work? What happens, you know, if we tear into a wall in a remodel and things aren't like we expected them to be and we got to replace more? Your contract should say, yes, I'm an expert in my field, but I cannot see through walls. And so if something is behind there that I don't know, I'm going to come to you and say, hey, I couldn't see this. This was not included, and it's going to cost additional. So that's a change order provision that should be in your contract. As well as if you're working on residential contracts, each state has something required when you're dealing with a homeowner that needs to be in that contract, either to protect your lien rights or be able to collect your money, that needs to be in there on upfront end. So we need to make sure that that language is in there. The main thing is that your contract should be a document that you understand and your customer understands, because it manages expectations and keeps us out of trouble in the long run and protects you, right? And so my firm offers this for $1,500, well worth the investment, right? Call up, we'll have an attorney give like an interview, find out what's important to you. We'll go through all the terms, you know, your payment terms, a week turnaround. We'll have a contract to you that is specifically for your business, specifically for your state. You know, we're here to help, because I don't want you to get sued, and I don't want you to get in a place where, you know, you're having a disagreement and you don't have any way out or any recourse. So if somebody is signing your contract, make the $1,500 investment. You can use it over and over again. It can be tweaked. It can be changed for any specific job. But that way, that contract gets you and the homeowner on the same page. You both have the same idea in your head of what to expect. And when that happens, there's a lot less likely to be any disputes or hiring an attorney because you can't get along. So spend the $1,500, give us a call. We'll put our contact information in the show notes. We're here to help you on that. So that is if someone is signing your contract or you're going to work for somebody. Hugely important. Even if you don't do the $1,500, have something in writing, just because you open yourself up to huge liability about what you were hired to do without a contract at all. And that's where we get in real trouble. So any kind of writing is better than none. I highly recommend our $1,500, you know, residential repair remodel contract. So give us a call for that. The other side is what if you're signing someone else's contract? Do you just sign it? Do you read it? What do you do? What I recommend is, even if you don't want to negotiate because you're afraid that you won't get the job, that you have it reviewed and understand what you're signing. Because again, a contract is supposed to manage expectations. You know, I think the commercial side of the business, of the construction industry, does a poor job in having contracts be what they actually are, which is another set of instructions of how the job is going to work. Like, what do we do if there's change orders? What is the warranty? What is the middle schedules? You know, all of this should be in there in a way that everybody can understand it. And it's not. You know, I've read thousands of subcontracts. You know, my eyesight went blurry. I had to get LASIK because it was just horrible reading subcontracts, and it took me hours to understand them. And this is what I do for a living. So my push is, first off, if you have a subcontract ready to sign, or anybody's contract you're getting ready to sign, for a flat fee, I offer a contract review, and I'll go through and tell you what everything means so you can understand it in plain English. You know, we start that review service at $550 for 15 pages and under. I think it's $1,050 for 15 to 30 pages. So, you know, affordable, put it into your, bid price so that we can go over what the contract you're getting ready to sign means and what you're agreeing to. And once I tell you what it means and you know what the risks are, then you can decide if you want to negotiate or not. And when I say negotiate, I'm not just saying cross it out and say, no, I won't agree to that. I'm saying, okay, let's meet in the middle somewhere. What are some ideas on how, the pay when pay clause can be split in the middle where not all the risk is on the subcontractor. But even if you don't want to negotiate, just know what you're agreeing to. You'll get in a lot less trouble if you understand the contract. Because here's the thing, whatever you agree to in a contract will be used against you. There's no set of rules that are protect you. There's no set of something that this can't be in the contract or you can't agree to this. Generally speaking, that just doesn't happen. So, don't just hold your nose and sign it. Let's make an informed business decision. Let's figure out the risk that we're taking, and then try to negotiate it if that's what you want to do. But at least understand what's in there. Like I said, again, we offer this for a flat fee starting at 550 bucks. I don't know why you wouldn't do it. It's just a smart business decision. So, two types of contracts. Your customer signing yours, you're signing someone else. Yours, if someone's signing yours, plain English, easy to understand, manage expectations. If you are signing someone else's, make sure you understand what it says, and what you're agreeing to. Another thing that is a legal landmine is not having a consistent collection strategy, right? It happens over and over again that you get in a position where you're owed a bunch of money and then you're like, oh, now what can I do to collect this money? And it happens faster than you think, right? You're working, you're working, you're working, and then all of a sudden you take a look at your open invoice, your report, and you're like, shit, how did it get so big? How do they owe me, that $100,000 or $500,000 that I just, I'm working and working, it seems like I don't have any money. And it's because you don't, because it's sitting there. It hasn't been collected. So I will tell you that being prepared on the front end and having, okay, if I'm not paid at 45 days, this is the process. We make phone calls, we do this. Whatever it is, have it up front. And especially guys, you're working in construction, use your lien rights, right? Huge, huge thing out there, right? What is a lien? It is a way to make the amount that you're owed secured by the property, right? It takes your debt, the amount that you're owed from being an unsecured debt to a secured debt. The catch is, guys, it's different in all 50 states. What is required to have a valid lien is different in all 50 states. So it requires, you got to send some type of notice at some point in time before you file the lien. The lien's got to be filed and you got to send notice of the lien. So whatever your state requires, work that process into your consistent collection strategy, right? There's a lot of things that you can do on your own as far as collection goes. But I'm going to tell you guys, my firm offers, collections and liens on a subscription price for very competitive prices for what you can get a subscription for on Levelset. I've honored the same price, except it's done by attorneys. It's done right. And most of my files are collected before they ever go to lien because I'm not just sending notices. I'm an actual collection department. So, if you need just one lien, 500 bucks. If you have a huge collection problem, $1,000 a month, depending on what you need, anywhere up from $1,000 to $2,500 a month. All here to help you, right? Just we have a process that's set up and done right. Because that's what I've done. That's what I've done for the last 17 years. I've collected, money that my family was owed in the construction industry, my clients' money. This is what I'm good at. This is absolutely worth the investment. Like I said, if it's worth 500 bucks to try to file a lien, to make a few phone calls, if collections are, you just want to outsource your whole collection department, great starting at $1,000 a month for a year commitment. But and it's done right. Some of the online lien filing services don't do them correctly. They're more of, they don't really have your best interest in heart. There's a process, there's automated systems. They don't really care if you collect your money. They're more in the, data collection business than they are in the money collection business. So, just some things to know out there. But back to what I was saying about having a consistent collection strategy before collections become an issue. So, you know what happens when you're not going to get paid. This is what happens. We make phone calls, we send letters, and then we send it over to the attorney's office for a further collection. So, like I said, collections, we do collections and liens in all 50 states. We're here to help you. If you have any questions, we're here to answer your, our phone number is 713-715-7000. 7334, and there'll be links to our website in the show notes where you can find out more about our flat fees, you know, our subscriptions, all of the things. So collections, huge thing. You got to get paid for what you do, or why are you even in business, right? Okay, the last thing that really prevents legal landmines is knowing how to CYA, or what I like to say, cover your ass. So this is things, your processes about internally, when the project starts, throughout the project, and when it ends, that documents the process and everything that happens in between, so that if anything does happen, you have your whole file, it's there, here's everything that happened, here's all the emails where the client approved the change orders, here's where they approved, you know, the tile color, the paint color, here's all of that, and it's here. That's how we CYA. You know, once you're in a contract, whether it's commercial or residential, right, you cannot change that contract by verbal statements. Nothing that they say or said or will be used to interpret the agreement between the parties. So it's got to be in writing, right? So when I'm talking about CYA, I'm talking about if there's an issue that rises up and you have a conversation about it, followed up with an email saying, we had a conversation about this issue and here's how it's going to be resolved, send the email. If you get an email saying, hey, you're not working fast enough, you don't have enough guys out here, you need to respond in writing to that email. Yes, I agree, and here's how we're going to fix it. Or no, I don't agree, and here's why. That becomes the story that you may need later on. It's just good business practices to have that all documented, and don't assume that somebody's going to honor their word. Unfortunately, that's where we are in the construction industry. That's why these contracts have gotten so messed up. Is that, yes, they mean to. I think they really mean to, but when they get the opportunity that they don't have to, right? Like, you know, a huge thing, I know I kind of went over this in the past, but right now, increased material cost. If you don't have a provision in your contract, whether that's a contract you sign with your clients or a contract you sign, you know, someone signs your contract, if you don't have it written in there, then you can't get that, you know, you can't get that increased cost. And now you are the one who's responsible for covering the increased cost. So guys, this is the checklist that I try to go over with all my clients and potential clients to make sure that they don't hit a landmine that will take them out. If you want to schedule a time where we can talk about your specific business, I'll make sure that they put my Calendly link in the show notes and you can schedule an appointment and we'll talk about all of the things and any other issues you might have. So guys, I hope you have a great day. You know, I hope that this helps you realize the risks that are out there and that you won't get hit by a landmine. So then again, I'm Carolyn Cromines, owner of the Cromines Law Firm, and I'm here to help. So reach out to me for any of the flat fees. If you have any questions, we can schedule a time to talk about it. All right, guys, have a great day. Thanks. Thank you for listening to this episode of Quit Getting Screwed. I hope you found it helpful. If you like what you hear, please like us and follow our podcast. If you want further information, you can find us at subcontractorinstitute.com. We're also on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Instagram. And the book is available on Amazon. Tune in 2 weeks from now for a new episode. Thank you.